Now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Turn it up.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are once again here live in the living color. If you will, episode 140. Ladies and gentlemen, we are live. I'm so excited to introduce and have a special 140th episode for tonight. I'm so thankful for everyone for continuing to support Pancakes and Power Slams. We are talking today, we're going to talk about famous pro wrestlers who were former football players, so famous, notable football players turned pro wrestlers. And so we're going to celebrate our 140th episode today by having that theme. Of course, we're going to have trivia, as we do all the time. But to honor the theme, and to honor the 140th episode, we have a special interview here by ROH star Moose. Great to have you tonight, sir.
Thanks for having me. Great to be on the show.
Awesome, awesome. Well, it's good to have you, and let's get into knowing a little bit more about Moose. Let us know about your sports background, sir.
Played 2 years of high school football. Got a scholarship at Syracuse, which I started a few games as a true freshman and at right tackle and played 4 years there. Got drafted to the Atlanta Falcons, which I played 4 years with them, and in 2010 was traded to the New England Patriots, which I played a year, and then signed a free agent deal with the Colts, which I played a year over there, and played my final year in 2012 with the St. Louis Rams, so I decided to hang it up and pursue a dream in the sport we call pro wrestling.
Absolutely. So what are your fondest pro football moments?
That's kind of hard. I mean, fondest pro football moments. I guess my first start when I was with the Falcons in 2006 against the it was 2007 against the San Francisco 49ers, and we got the win. That's probably my best moment.
Nice.
My fondest moment.
Awesome. Well, you had a football background, a pro football background, and you decided to transition into the world, as you say, your dream, and pursue pro wrestling. So let us know when you had a desire to start wrestling. Was it something that you enjoyed watching as a kid? And how did you get your break into pro wrestling?
I was always a big fan. I've watched it for so long since I was maybe 10 years old, probably younger. And it's always something I knew I wanted to do. I just didn't know when I wanted to start that journey to achieve that. So football was something, I mean, I was good at, but I never was growing up and say, oh, I want to be a football player. Oh, I want to play in the NFL. It was just something I got a passion for when I was in high school. And I never even thought about playing in the NFL. I didn't really decide that you know what, I want to see how I want to play in the NFL until maybe my junior year in college. And it was just a challenge to myself just to see if I could make it to the next level. And luckily I did. And I mean, it was never a big passion of mine. It was just a challenge I made to myself to see if I could push it to the next level. But wrestling was always what I wanted to do. I was always wanted to be a wrestler. I always told myself I want to be a WWE champion, or, you know, growing up. So there's a big passion there for me. And in 2012, wow. When I got released from the Rams, I think in October, November, one of those months, I decided this was the best time to leave the game and pursue what I really love to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you get your break into pro wrestling?
How did I get my break, or how did I start?
How did you start? Who trained you, and how did you get your opportunity to start wrestling?
I found a school in Atlanta, which is the head trainer there is Curtis Big Cat Hughes. I know if guys who don't know him, he's an old WWE guy that worked for all major promotions back in the day, WWE, with WCW, or ECW. I even think he did, I don't know if he did anything with TNA, but I know with the top two companies with WCW and WWE, he did stuff with them. I know he did some stuff with ECW. But I found this school in Atlanta, Georgia, which I currently live at, that paid the fee and decided to go get some training there. And I mean, it worked out great.
Awesome.
But he did most of my training, and then after I got what I needed to get from him, I decided that I got connected with a good buddy of mine, a mentor of mine right now, Scott DeMore, through a good friend of mine, Frank Trigg. And Frank Trigg knows Frank because I don't know if you remember, he had a stint with TNA, where I think Scott DeMore was either booking or he was doing something in front office. So I called Frank and told him, hey, man, I'm trying to do this wrestling thing. And he was like, hey, I got a good buddy for you to contact. And he gave me Scott DeMore's number, and I hit him up. And I went to Canada for a few weeks and got some training with Scott.
Wow. Yeah, Scott DeMore is definitely a very well-known name as far as his stint with TNA, being the manager of Team Canada, and currently his work in New Japan as the manager of the Bullet Club with Jeff Jarrett, just recently joined the Bullet Club this year, and Scott DeMore is more of his consultant. So Scott DeMore, I mean, for a lot of diehard fans, Scott DeMore is certainly a well-known name as far as booking is concerned, and backstage backstage influence is concerned. So definitely a good person to get you your break into pro wrestling. So ROH was your first home, is your current home. So let us know let us know a little bit more about your 2-year run in ROH. Once you first came, because of your physical presence and because of a very catchy name and a catchy song that comes with the name, you were immediately liked, and the charisma that came with those things immediately caught the crowd's eye, and the agility that came with the size that you have was very impressive to the fans. So it was really, really easy for you to navigate right into pro wrestling. So let us know so far about your experience in pro wrestling this past couple of years in ROH.
I don't think it's been, I know you say it's 2 years with ROH. I don't even think it's been a year with them yet. Before
well,
I even
2 years wrestling period.
Yeah,
two years wrestling period. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. But before I even got to ROH, I had a short run with Dragon Gate USA and Evolve, and that's where I really started at. I did some stuff with them, and I want to say it was September of last year. I went up to Philly with a few buddies of mine from WWA Forward, the school I trained at, to do a Ring of Honor seminar slash tryout. And this was while I was doing working with Dragon Gate and Evolve. So I did this seminar with Ring of Honor, and I guess I was one of the guys who stood out at the seminar. And they pretty much told me, man, you're good. Just keep showing your face and, you know, keep showing your face. And whenever we have a spot for you, we'll put you on. And I did exactly what they told me. I just kept showing my face and driving to shows that was close enough to Atlanta. I would drive to Dayton. I would drive to Tennessee. I would sometimes even fly to Philly for a show or fly to Pittsburgh for a show. So I spent a lot of money just so I could show my face in the company. And then one time, and when they did, I went to a show and they told me, man, we're going to make a spot for you. And that's how my time with ROH started. Man.
Wow. So you started to really have a presence on your own, and then all of a sudden you started to align yourself with R.D. Evans and Veda Scott. Let us know your experience of ROH so far and your alliance with R.D. Evans. How's that working for you?
I mean, R.D. taught me a lot of things, and things I'll never forget, things I'll definitely use, continue to use, and throughout my whole wrestling career. And I don't know if you've been watching, I broke myself away from him. It was one of those things where I took what I needed from him, and when I decided I could go on my own, I decided to break that group up with us two. So, I mean, we actually have a match with each other, final battle this Sunday on pay-per-view, New York City, and he's kind of pissed off that I decided to go my own way, and causing him to lose, I think, 174 win streak he had going. So he's kind of pissed off about it. I guess he wants to do something about it on Sunday, so we'll see.
Yeah, final battle should be a very interesting and very fun and exciting show getting ready for that. I believe Adam Cole and Jay Briscoe's got a match too on Final Battle, right?
Oh yeah, that's if I'm not mistaken, that's a main event. And those two guys are great, man. I've learned a lot from those two guys. Probably one of the two best wrestlers in the world right now. And Adam Cole and Jay Briscoe. So that's going to be a match you definitely want to pay, I think, $29 to watch. I mean, you're going to see it all. If I'm not mistaken, the match is called Fight Without Honor, so anything goes.
Yep, absolutely. As far as a program is concerned, I think that ROH taping is about 3 weeks to a month off at least. So it's interesting how the taping goes. I watch, I'm an avid ROH fan, and I watch it every week, but the taping with ROH is a little behind as far as knowing what happened, you know, recently, within the last week or two. I did remember I did go to the Survivor of the Fittest event, and I saw you there live, and let us know your experience at the Survival of the Fittest in Columbus.
Oh, man. Columbus, the crowd was absolutely nuts there. I mean, probably one of the best crowds I've been around. It was a great, it was a great show. I mean, from top to bottom. I think I wrestled the pre-show that day, and it was a fun match. Me and Artie did tag that weekend, and Toledo wasn't quite as good as Columbus. It felt like Toledo was more of a WWE type crowd, where a lot of their fans didn't know our product, so they didn't really know who they was watching when certain guys would come out. So it was kind of weird, but Columbus was definitely hot. I mean, probably one of the best crowds I've been worked since I've been with Ring of Honor. I mean, we've had some great crowds, like Tennessee is always great, and Philly is absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to know. That's very, very good to know that you enjoyed the Columbus crowd. I had a great time. I've been to more than one ROH event. And I had a fantastic time in Columbus.
The question
and
is, are you
just
coming?
Are
you coming to New York?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. And you're right. You know, just the crowd in Columbus is very, very exciting. And knows their wrestling, knows their product. And I was with a few people, and I was getting them familiar with you and a couple other names, of course, names like Jay Briscoe and Steve Corino and people like that. I think the Briscoes lost against the Kingdom that night. But people like that are known. But, you know, up in rising stars like yourself, you know, people, it's kind of one of those word of mouth type of, hey, you got to check out this Moose guy. And I did that to a great friend of mine who I was with. And he immediately was like, you know, when he wanted to have you on the show. He wanted an interview, and I was like, man, I told him before he agreed. I said, man, we got to get Moose on the show, and people need to know about Moose. And I know that the Pancakes and Power Slam show reaches, you know, tens of thousands of people, and people need to know about this ROH star that's really making a name for himself in the world of pro wrestling, and it was important for people for you to have this platform to let people know about you more. So, man, it's awesome to for you to pursue your dream. Is there any wrestlers that you grew up liking as a kid?
Oh yeah, definitely. Growing up, I was I'm a Ric Flair. I think Ric Flair is the greatest wrestler of all time that ever lived, that ever put on a pair of trunks or a pair of wrestling boots. So that's my number one favorite wrestler of all time. But guys I really looked up to, and this guy is actually a good friend of mine right now. I met him about two years ago, and we've been good friends. I'm good buddies with his son, and that, I'm talking about Scott Hall. And I was a huge fan of Razor Ramon back in the early 90s, 91, 92, when he had this push and his run in WWE, and big super fan of him. Moving to the Attitude Era, I mean, who didn't like Stone Cold and The Rock? And I was also a big Goldberg fan, and past the Attitude Era, I was a big Brock Lesnar fan, actually still a big Brock Lesnar fan, and that's why the whole hop on the apron thing I do. I mean, that's kind of like a thing I do to kind of, you know what I'm saying, pay respect to him, I guess, if you want to call it that. But, yeah, I mean, my two favorites from all time is definitely Ric Flair and Scott Hall. I mean, there's more on the list, but those two are definitely stand on the top on their own.
Those are two really interesting names. Of course, Ric Flair, and I think, you know, I think Scott Hall, you know, from a wrestling standpoint, I think he was one of those uncrowned world champions. I know people write, including myself, I'm a journalist and I write articles for the Bleacher Report and WeAreWrestling.net. I know that, you know, for years and years and years, people, and we've even had topics on this show as far as people uncrowned world champions and people who should have won, you know, the world champion, either the WCW or the WWE World Championship at least once in their career. And I totally believe that Scott Hall is one of those guys. I remember when you said that he was Razor Ramon. He was really at the peak of his career. He was so over as Razor Ramon, as a babyface. As a heel, he was over, but he was still kind of underneath, you know, the present heels at that time. He was a little further down the line. But as a, when he broke out into a face, he was super, super over and won the Intercontinental Championship multiple times. And I think at that time, around, you know, between 93 to 96, I think he should have won the WWE title at least one time.
In my opinion, I think the only reason he was never a WWE champ because he left. I mean, that's easy. I mean, if he would have stayed a few more years, I definitely think he would have been a WWE champ. And I think the reason why he never won in WCW because he was more of a tag team wrestler when he got to WCW with Kevin Nash. So it was kind of hard for him. In WCW, they was more pushing the old guys and not really the young guys. So I think that kind of limited him from being a world champion in WCW. But definitely WWE, I think, in my opinion, the reason why he was never WWE champion is because he left right during the prime, and why he was actually getting the push, that's when he decided to leave. Which, I mean,
yeah, yeah, 96. Yeah, I think 96 was there were. It seems like Vince was trying to put some more people, you know, like Triple H and Austin. I think that they were trying to take away Scott Hall's push, it seems like, because I remember at that time he was getting, they were putting Vader over him a lot. And I don't know. I really think that, you know, at least he's one of those people that at least one time he should have got the title at least, you know, one time in his career, because he was definitely an uncrowned world champion. But let us know your future wrestling goals as far as what do you see yourself in a year. What are you aspiring to do in your wrestling career in the near future?
Oh man, I hate answering questions like that because I live in the present. I can tell you what goals I have. I don't know what I'm gonna do in the next year. Only time can tell. But as a kid, I always wanted to be a WWE champ. So I definitely feel like before my wrestling career is over, I want to wrestle in a WWE ring. I'm not saying it's going to be a year from now. I'm not saying it's going to be – I have no idea. I mean, I'm happy with where I'm at now. I mean, I'm working with Ring of Honor. I'm happy with Ring of Honor. They take care of me. I mean, I love all the guys on the roster. We're all family at Ring of Honor, so I'm happy with where I'm at there. But I do know before my wrestling career is done, I would love to wrestle in a WWE ring. So that's how I can answer that question. But to say where I'm going to be a year from now, I mean, who knows? I probably would still be in Ring of Honor. Who knows? I mean, if that's the case, I mean, I won't be mad at that. I mean, there's a lot of people. There's thousands of people who want to be in the position I'm in now. So, I mean, I'm grateful for that. So, but who knows? I mean, you never know. I mean, we'll see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of the WWE, if I give you one person who say this is WrestleMania 31, right, and you are booked to wrestle anyone of your choosing at WrestleMania 31, That's a great choice. Why Brock Lesnar?
Why Brock Lesnar? Because I've read, and in my opinion, I say Brock Lesnar, and not taking nothing away from him, because, like I said, right now, currently, he's my favorite wrestler. I mean, in the last 10 years, he's been my favorite wrestler. Even when he was doing his thing with UFC, he was my favorite wrestler. And I think it's one of those things where they say that, I've heard people say Brock Lesnar was the best athlete in wrestling. And I think I'm the best athlete in wrestling. So I think a match with me claiming I'm the best athlete and people saying he's the best athlete will put up a good match. I mean,
nice. Yeah. Moose versus Brock Lesnar. You both are athletic powerhouses that have pro football experience. So
right.
Definitely think it would be a very interesting billing, Moose against Brock Lesnar. So who's the heel in that match? You or Brock?
It really doesn't matter who the heel. It doesn't matter. I guess you could say he's the hero, man. It doesn't matter. I mean, it would be, if I'm the heel, that would be great. If he's the heel, that would be great. I think it would
either
be a
way.
Very good. It would be either way. It would be a great. I think it would be a great match. I mean, two personas like us and two athletes like us. I mean, I think it would be a good match.
Absolutely. I agree as well. I think in that case, I think you should play the babyface. If I had my pick, you would be the babyface because you would come in as the rookie, as the up and comer, and Brock Lesnar. You know, he's playing his heel role. He's got Paul Heyman by his side, and you know, I could just see the crowd getting behind you with your Moose chant and people just chanting Moose, and it'd be a very very intense and very physical match. And then, you know, you get the three count and the crowd goes wild. He passes the baton and there you go. There's Moose's start and cement in WWE.
Boy,
I think that's a fantastic
I think about that quite a bit. Like, what if I got a chance to wrestle somebody I've looked up to, like Brock? I mean, I will probably shed tears the night before that match actually happened. And probably the night afterwards. I mean, that would be definitely a big dream of mine come through.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing. So there's a stable in the WWE called A New Day, and that's Kofi Kingston, Big E, and Xavier Woods. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the state of black pro wrestlers and, you know, cliches and things like that as far as WWE is concerned. What do you think about the New Day stable? And, you know, give us your take on that.
At first, I didn't like it. Because when they first started it, which was by like 3 months ago, 2 months ago, when they showed pretty much a glimpse that they was going to start a faction with those three guys, the first thing that came in my mind was, oh, my God, they're trying to do a new nation of domination. And that right there made me not to like it. But once they started doing the vignettes and they actually debuted it, The New Day, I mean, I'm a big fan of it. I mean, it's something different, which you've never seen a group like that, you know. And you don't think Nation of Domination because it's so different than what Nation of Domination stood for, you know. So I think it's something different. I mean, it's good. I like it. We just got to see where it goes from here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I agree with you on that. I was totally opposed to it in the beginning, but there's something about it now that is catchy to me. I don't know what it is, but it's something that's catchy to me. A lot of people don't think, you know, a lot of people want Kofi Kingston to turn heel, and I was one of the biggest proponents of Kofi Kingston turning heel. But there's something about the New Day stable that's catchy and fun, and the crowds are clapping with them and chanting New Day. So that would be interesting to see where they go.
I think it's a fun faction. I don't think it's a real serious faction. I think it's just one of those things. I mean, it's a baby face faction. I mean, you get the crowd into it. I like it. I mean, anything that gets the crowd into it is always a plus on my side. I think it's good. I mean, like I said, at first, when they first started, I think everybody thought it was going to be them trying to create a new nation. And I didn't like it because I think the crowd and the fans was going to have a nation domination chance or whatever. And I mean, I like the direction it's going. We just got to see where it goes from there. I mean, and I don't, in my opinion, and I mean, it's just my opinion. I mean, I think Kofi is one of those guys who can never turn heel. It's kind of like Rey Mysterio never was a heel. I mean, if you look back through his history if you look back at Rey's career, I don't think he was ever a heel. I think Kofi is one of those guys where you can't turn him heel.
Yeah, I don't think Kofi as a heel is the end-all, be-all answer to him. Because, you know, for a long time, his character was stale. Rey Mysterio was heel for just a drop of a hat when he was with the Filthy Animals back in the WCW, late 90s, early 2000s, I think it was. But and that's when he didn't have a mask on, and it was just really, really weird.
That was a very short run, though. That was probably like a month.
Yeah, very short.
Like, I think they tried it, it didn't work out so good, and then, mm-hmm. It's the same thing. I mean, I feel like if Kofi was ever to turn heel, it would definitely not last long, because mm-hmm. I could not see Kofi as a wrestler as a heel. I mean, he does so much cool stuff that you can't. If you turn him heel, it takes away from all the cool stuff that he does.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of hard to turn him, a guy so flashy like him, heel, you know?
Yep, totally agree. I agree, because I think that, you know, I wanted to see some type of something, you know, with his character, but, you know, hearing your take and hearing other people's takes as far as, you know, I just wanted something different. I wanted something different for his character. But, you know, just really looking at it, my suggestion was turning him heel and putting him in NXT. It's kind of like Tyson Kidd, but I don't even know if that'll work. I think NXT run by Kofi would have possibly worked, but like you said, at the end of the day, it probably would have led to just a short heel run, if anything, kind of like Mysterio, just to realize that he's a Tito Santana type of guy. Like, you know,
right,
Tito was never a heel, you know, and that's his same thing as Ricky Steamboat. It was never a heel, you know. So, absolutely. So as we wrap up, let us know some. You said the final battle for ROH is this weekend. Let us know any other shows that you have for all the listeners out there.
Man, I wish I had my iPad on my tablet, because that's where I usually keep all my dates at. But final battle is definitely the big one, and that's this next Sunday, or this Sunday coming up, December 7th, 7 p.m., in New York City, Terminal 5, and that's on pay-per-view, so you can check your local cable listings or your satellite listings and order it. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's $29.99, so it's not that expensive. It's definitely affordable, and watch the best wrestler in the world, and watch Moose kick the crap out of RD.
There you go. Thank you so much, Moose, for joining us today. Tonight I had a very fun time getting to talk to you and discuss wrestling with you. And I'm sure the listeners, as we are getting a lot of comments from the WeAreWrestling.net live stream going on right now. And people know more about Moose, and people certainly will know more and more and more about Moose as time goes by. And hopefully we'll get to see that Brock Lesnar versus Moose match down the line sooner than later, sir.
Right. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. It was definitely a pleasure being on your show, and hopefully I could get come back soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and have a great evening.
How you doing?
Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Moose. So happy to have him on the show. Great interview. Just knowing more about Moose, and man, I really, really think that people, he's at the point right now that he's making himself known. Only 2 years in the business, only a year in ROH, a little over a year in ROH, and really making himself known early in pro wrestling. And there's certain wrestlers who really, have that it factor and just shave off so many years of their career by having that that charisma, that it factor. And some people like Kurt Angle, people like Brock Lesnar, people like Bill Goldberg, they don't have to wrestle, 10, 15 years to become noted, to become notable. Someone like Moose, he has a very physical presence, tall guy, big guy, but he can still do a drop kick like a cruiserweight. So, and I had an opportunity to watch him live. Like I said, it's a Survivor of the Fittest, and it was awesome. And I thank you, thank Moose so much, for giving Columbus that awesome crowd. I visited the ROH show and went to Columbus and had a fantastic, fantastic time. And Moose is a really good guy, man. And be sure to follow his career. He's a upstart young guy. He's a young guy, but he still have had some time in football, so he's not like super young, but he's still young as far as pro wrestling is concerned, and has got some little bit of experience under his belt. But be sure to keep up with Moose. So I'm really excited. Check out Final Battle ROH this weekend as he goes against RD Evans, his former tag team partner, and be sure to keep up with Moose. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have our Raw discussion coming up right after this short break.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
Four corners, three, our mind. Let's go. The whole squad is making it clear we've taken this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God. Get out the big boys' way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings. You see in us, but our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo. Cut the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Prizzle, pinning them to the mat.
And I'm Dash One Nation with the strength of 100 men, with one intent to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture, white coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate, suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday, raving, anticipating. I was frostbit, now I am glacier, mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals. Using God for my defense in Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful, Bobby Eaton, me and Priest. We the dangerous alliance, nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do-rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep, you all what you speak, this too sweet.
Till the number is took back, we reppin' that work pack. The foundation shaking, no mistaking, yeah, we shook that. Trust in God, we trust, pushing forward, never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness, some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap, he turning the power on the razor's edge, leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man, we bringing the truth through. Diligent and fruitful, the owners in our group too. It's good to be king, sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games, our army go move too. You bathroom, I'm in the Raptors with a bat in my hand, and stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it. This the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, thank you so much for joining us. Episode 140, we're dedicating this show, this 140th episode. It's a milestone episode. The theme of this episode tonight is notable wrestlers who were football players, and that's going to be the topic of our Flavor of the Week this week. And we started off with the first half of our show with a notable wrestler was a football player, notable football player turned wrestler, which was Moose. And he's a hot fire rising ROH star, and only a couple years in pro wrestling, already turning some heads and causing some attention in the pro wrestling world. So without further ado, I have Derek, our Pancakes and Power Slams co-host, on the line. Good to have you tonight, sir.
Yes, it is good to have me, because I'm Derek, Pancake and Power Slams correspondent. We just had an awesome, awesome interview with Moose. It just kind of goes to show you, not everybody who is a football star can go on to be a professional wrestling star. There's been a few, and luckily Moose is one of them. He's hanging in there. But there's been a lot of good ones, bad ones. I mean, it just takes an all-around pure athlete. And like he was saying about passion, you have to have that passion to be a professional wrestler. You can't just be somebody that is big, I can play football, I can smash into people. That doesn't make the cut. So, I mean, we've got a great flavor of the week tonight. We're going to go off with Raw. But football and wrestling doesn't go hand in hand, but sometimes it does. We're going to find out who it does for flavor of the week. Let's get Raw started.
Absolutely. Well, we start off with John Cena having an exchange with the anonymous Raw GM, and which I totally still hope doesn't last for long at all. But how dare I not start Pancakes and Power Slams before Raw without trivia? Thank you for all the comments, by the way. Thank you for all the comments, by the way, of the interview. I too thought it was a fantastic interview. I think Moose is a great guy. So once again, Final Battle 2014 ROH. Check it out on iPay-Per-View this weekend. Jay Briscoe against Adam Cole for the ROH Heavyweight Championship. Who were the Wild-Eyed Southern Boys? That's the first trivia question on deck for tonight. Who were the Wild-Eyed Southern Boys? Wild-Eyed Southern Boys. I know we got some people clamoring for some trivia, and I totally agree. I'm a big trivia fan as well. Who were the Wild-Eyed Southern Boys? Let us know your guesses on that as far as the trivia question on deck. And, of course, if no one answers that trivia question, Derek gets dibs on trivia. So we'll see where that goes. All right, so we got John Cena having a exchange with the Raw general manager. Just totally, totally not exciting at all. And then we get Seth Rollins appearing, pleading for the authority to return. Raw GM makes a match for TLC, Cena versus Rollins, and Cena loses. He loses the number one contender of the championship. The number to call live is 347-884-8452. Once again, the number to call live is 347-884-8452. Family show. We got some screening, so keep it PG. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. All right, so once again, the trivia question on deck is, what was the who were the wild-eyed Southern boys? And once again, the trivia, the number to call live is 347-884-8452. 347-884-8452. Let us know your raw thoughts and your thoughts on Moose. Once again, this is a family-friendly show, so that pretty much says it all right there. So, all right, so we basically what happens with the Raw GM is Cena and the Raw GM goes back and forth, which doesn't make any sense ever, that the Raw GM is still an the anonymous GM is back. I still think it's absolutely ridiculous. So you have Seth Rollins coming out, and then you have Kane and Ryback and J&J Security, Eric Rowan and Big Show and Dolph Ziggler, and Luke Harper gets involved. And then Cena gets triple powerbombed, Shield style, by Rollins and J&J Security. So I suppose that that's just leading into making Seth Rollins look like a more, look like a big, you know, threat to John Cena. But I really don't think that we're going to see, it's almost anything other than John Cena versus Brock Lesnar, to me, would not make sense. Maybe it may, you know, a lot of people are saying Randy Orton versus Brock Lesnar. I just don't know. Well, they're holding off Randy Orton on TV now. I don't know how he'll get back into that, you know, the championship fold and as a face when he still got some retribution with Seth Rollins. It just really seems like from a booking standpoint, there's still, you know, there was a screwy finish with Cena versus Lesnar the second time at Night of Champions. So it just seems like this is, you know, pacifying the inevitable of Cena versus Lesnar at Royal Rumble. I'm really not interested in the Roman Reigns versus, not Roman Reigns, but I'm not interested in the Seth Rollins versus John Cena feud. I'm just not interested in that. I really don't think it does much for Seth Rollins at all. And it just seems like they're trying to just pull anything out of the air to really kind of make us forget the fact that Brock Lesnar still is not appearing on WWE TV and hasn't appeared on WWE TV in almost 3 months as the world champion. So it's really just they're trying their best to really, you know, really take us away from the inevitable, and that's the fact that Brock Lesnar not being on TV for 3 months is really bringing the product down tremendously.
It's bringing it down. And the thing is, I can't watch Seth Rollins. I think, really, out of all the former Shield members, Seth Rollins is the most boring. He just comes out. He's really monotone. I call him Monotone Belly. Because guess what? John Cena, I'm Mr. Money in the Bank, and you can't do this to me. It's so
right.
Boring. It was a pathetic Raw. Raw was pathetic last week, and it was a starting Raw off, and then I want Seth Rollins to do good, but I just don't. I can't. It was so boring. And the whole thing with him coming out, you need Brock Lesnar to come out. You can't have Seth Rollins or anybody in the authority for that much take Lesnar's place. You can't do that. It just doesn't work now. And it won't work. And Seth Rollins is not the future. He won't be the future from what I see. And it's just really saddening and disheartening that I sit through Raw and I'm just criticizing it the whole time instead of, hey, that was great, that was great, that was great. It's been a long time since I've watched Raw and not have to criticize it. And it's, you know, not that I'm anybody to criticize Raw, but yeah, I am. I've been a wrestling fan for 30 years. I've been in the wrestling business. I've rubbed shoulders with some big-time people. I've done some things in it. And, yeah, I can say that this was an absolute garbage mistake. And it's boring. And Seth Rollins just doesn't have what it takes.
Yeah. I I really don't see what people like about Seth Rollins. Of course, people are entitled to their own wrestling opinion. But I just don't see Seth Rollins as a top guy. I don't think it's because of Seth Rollins, because I followed Seth Rollins. Speaking of ROH, where Moose is at right now, I followed Seth Rollins when he was Tyler Black in ROH, and Tyler Black was very over when he won the ROH World Championship as a babyface. He was over when he won the NXT championship as a babyface. He was over. I think it's a character development issue right now for Seth Rollins. That's the biggest thing. That even when he was in the Shield, he was over. The Shield worked. It was different. He came in as a heel when he was a face in NXT. It worked. But the Marvel comic leather bodysuit, the very generic Super Nintendo style music, the very bland promos, I don't think that, you know, see, that's where, you know, we always talk about traditional pro wrestling, you know, on this show. That's where you need somebody like a Steamboat or a Dusty Rhodes or a Jake Roberts even to really help people with their promos and their character development, because you just really can't – it doesn't work by wrestling ability alone. We've seen many people – Kofi Kingston's one of those people. Phenomenal wrestler, but his character was very stale. That's the reason why he was, you know, limited so much. That's the reason why he always reached the ceiling. And the same – I feel the same with Seth Rollins. I feel like an amazing performer, awesome in the ring – but his character development is still not there. I just don't see it. It's not over with me, and I don't think he's over. I don't think he's over. Period. Honestly, I don't see anything. I don't see anything about Seth Rollins that makes me think, look at him and say, "Oh yeah, there's a main eventer right there." I just don't see it, and I don't think we're going to see it anytime soon, unless, unless they really, you know, kind of, you know, really eat, you know, eat their eggs, you know, that's they threw at other people and, you know, just eat them themselves, so to speak, and count their losses and say, yeah, well, maybe we should make the decision to turn Seth Rollins babyface and have him have that Jeff Hardy 2.0 style pop, because I think that's the only thing that's really going to help him as far as getting really, really over with the crowd. I think right now people are judging him based on his athletic ability, and that's just not pro wrestling. It's not, you can't just be athletic and a good wrestler. We see that all the time. You know, Jack Swagger's athletic and a good wrestler, but he's always reaching a ceiling because his charisma was, you know, as bland as, you know, a white chalkboard. And so, you know, with Zeb Coulter it helped, but Swagger still was a bland, you know, character himself. And I see the same thing with Seth Rollins. So great point there. Uso wins Tag Team Turmoil, defeating Golden Stardust, A New Day, Kid and Cesaro, Adam Rose and the Bunny. Now, I was talking to a colleague yesterday. He texted me and wanted my thoughts on a New Day, on a New Day stable. And I agree with Moose. I'm getting texts. Why not pick up the phone? I don't see anybody on the line right now. Again, 347-884-8452, 347-884-8452. I don't see anyone live on the line here. Maybe there's some technical difficulties, but yeah, be sure to call in. I just don't see anyone live on the line here. We usually have some people down here, so I don't know if it's some type of glitch, but I'll definitely get the team on there and see what is going on so we can get some calls. But And Moose was talking about the New Day stable, and I agree with Moose. I didn't like them essentially because I was thinking like, you know, Nation of Domination 2.0. This is going to be horrible. But I tell you what, though, I was surprised. I was quite surprised that there is actually some intrigue that I have with this New Day stable. And I agree with Moose as well. I've been a proponent of turning him heel, turning Kofi Kingston heel. And like I said on the show, I still think that maybe a heel turn in NXT, kind of like what Tyson Kidd did, just to kind of refreshing his character and helping him out, would help Kofi. But, you know, it would do something to change his character. But maybe this is good enough. Maybe because I don't think a heel turn, because I keep hearing, you know, turn the New Day heel, turn them heel. I don't think that's going to help anything. I don't see the purpose of doing that, because only thing that's going to put them below the current heels that they have, and it's not going to make a difference. So you might as well just keep them babyface, and might as well just have them clap and chant New Day and just, you know, be fun to watch, and, you know, Big E carry his towel and preach to Kofi and Xavier Woods. I don't know. It's something about them that's intriguing. I'm not, you know, totally sold on them, but I'm surprised that I like them as much as I thought I did. I guess that's the best way to say it.
I'm still not too totally sold on them. I mean, they look like fun, like almost like men on a mission. I mean, they have a good chemistry together. I mean, Kofi Kingston, I mean, no matter what you say about him, I mean, the dude has talent. The dude can go. Same thing with I almost said Ezekiel Elliott, but I meant Big E Langston. You can really, I mean, they're awesome talents, and you can't deny them from their wrestling ability, from their showcase. I hope good things for them. I never really thought of them as much of a Nation of Domination. It just didn't really strike much to me. I can see the similarities or why people thought that now, but it's, you know, let them go out, see what they can do. I mean, they didn't impress too much last night, and you had the Usos winning, which is kind of boring. I mean, the Usos have been champions for a long time, and they recently lost it, and now they're back in the hunt again. So, I mean, I still say you should have kept it on Gold Stardust. I'm unhappy with where they are at, the titles are at now, but, you know, it was just kind of a dud for the whole thing last night, for the brackets, or whatever we call it, for the tag team title. So,
tag team turmoil. I wasn't, you know, I'm a big Usos fan. I wasn't too big on the Usos winning either, to be honest with you. I like the Usos. Without a doubt, I like the Usos. Usos are still my favorite tag team. But I don't know if having the Usos go against Miz and Mizdow was the best idea. It just seems like another Usos opportunity. Just kind of, you know, give the Usos an opportunity on Royal Rumble or Elimination Chamber. Well, it's not Elimination Chamber no more. Whatever it's called now, I don't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but the February pay-per-view. And, you know, just don't put them right back into, you know, the tag team title hunt. I think that give them an opportunity off of the tag team title hunt, and have them, you know, get into a feud with someone, with the tag team, or with, you know, two random people, probably, you know, the Big Show and Mark Henry as the heels, or something like that. You know, them being upset that they were with Big E, with the Authority, and they aligned themselves with John Cena before. Something they can create, some angle they can create randomly. But I you know, just having them in the fray again, not so much. So be sure to call in 347-884-8452. I'm getting all types of messages of people trying to call in. Moose called in with no issue. So I don't know exactly why people are having issues, but be sure to but try it again. 347-884-8452. Never had any issues. I never had any issues looking at numbers in the queue. And like I said, Moose caught in perfectly. Yeah, I think, you know, and if, you know, if there's anyone, I can actually call people from the show, too. So, you know, call in. Let you know, give us, you know, give us your phone number, and we can see if we can call you from the show, see if that works. But usually I have people call in typically. But yeah, and good comment here. Moose versus Brock Lesnar could be a pretty good match one day. I agree. I think that's you know, that's not really some random match that doesn't make sense. I really think that Moose versus Brock Lesnar would be a very interesting match. They both are big guys. They both are athletic, you know, football backgrounds. And I would say that Moose is more agile than Brock Lesnar is. And I would even say he's heavier and bigger than Brock Lesnar, but it would be a very interesting match to see. It would be very interesting in that. But next, we have Eric Rowan against The Big Show. Eric Rowan wins by DQ. I suppose that Big Show versus Eric Rowan makes sense. They're making Rowan a baby face right now. And, you know, I suppose that putting him in the feud with The Big Show would kind of help him as a baby face. The only thing is with that, I don't know how much that would help Eric Rowan if he beats The Big Show, though. I really think, you know, The Big Show has been such a great contribution to pro wrestling since he debuted in 1994, I believe it was. Yeah, thank you. Fastlane is the pay-per-view, absolutely. You know, nowadays I'm like, I don't see any help. I don't see any purpose at all with The Big Show. I don't see how Big Show has any type of importance to pro wrestling. I may be the only one. Derek, I know you're going to have your take here soon. But Eric Rowan versus The Big Show, it's a big, tall guy versus a big, tall guy. It just seems like a filler feud. I don't see how much it'll help Eric Rowan, because at this point I really think that WrestleMania, this should be the road to retirement for both Big Show and Mark Henry leading into WrestleMania 31. Both of them should go.
Yeah, they should both go. And there was nothing either one could gain from it. I mean, you had Eric Rowan, he's up-and-comer. You had Big Show, who's up-and-dumber. So it doesn't – I mean, there was nothing the Big Show could gain from it. There's nothing Eric Rowan could gain from it. I mean, it was kind of like thrown together at the last minute. And I think everyone was surprised, like, why are these two going against each other? You know, who cares? And that's exactly what you got. And that's a shame, because the Big Show should be a fierce predator in the WWE, but he's a soft, cuddly teddy bear that no matter what he does, he's still just going to be the big, dumb, laughingstock buffoon. And that's just what happens. They'll throw Eric Rowan with him. You know, bless his heart, Eric Rowan didn't deserve that. But that's what he got, and that's what he gets. And Eric Rowan's not going to benefit either way.
Yeah, I agree. Trivia question on deck is, who were the wild-eyed Southern boys? No answer yet. A lot of interaction going on the live Twitter feed by wearewrestling.net, and also through messages and text and all that good stuff, people listening to the show. So no answer yet, surprisingly, with all the interaction going on. So,
oh yeah,
Derek, who were the wild-eyed Southern boys?
I'm thinking, if I can think straight, I don't remember them wild-eyed, but I remember Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong.
That's correct. They were
yeah.
the wild-eyed Southern boys, and they're also the Young Pistols in the
yes.
in the NWA. Yep, you probably remember them as the Young Pistols.
I
Next
remember,
question. No, go ahead.
You remember them? For a while, and it was a great time. Tracy Smothers was a really laid-back guy. He was somebody that really loved to show people and train people and just you know, show them the business. He would see somebody who was passionate in. I mean, he'd take them aside, show them different moves. He's really huge on the independent circuit, or he was. You know, back, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. So, I mean, Tracy Smothers really, I mean, he breathes wrestling. If anybody could watch Tracy Smothers, I mean, he is somebody to really watch and to learn from.
What's so funny about Tracy Smothers to me is that he was such a cookie cutter Southern boy, 20 years ago, but he got real big, you know, he picked up some weight, and he became absolutely one of the funniest wrestlers that I ever remember, because he goes from wild-eyed Southern boy, Young Pistol, to a member of the full-blooded Italians in ECW. Like, I just think that was absolutely the funniest thing to me. And just him dancing in the ECW ring, he was absolutely funny. It's hilarious that he made such a big change in his character from those two. But even I think his FBI Tracy Smothers and all the times that he worked in the Indies, like you mentioned, I think that really. His time in WCW was popular when he was the Young Pistols. I think they were U.S. heavyweight champions. They were feuding with the Midnight Express for a while. But just his time in ECW was just absolutely funny to me. Next question on deck. You can't answer it yet, Derek. Before Extreme, the E in ECW stood for what? Before Extreme, the E in ECW stood for what? Next, we have your boy Fandango defeating Jack Swagger by forfeit. Yeah, defeating Jack Swagger by forfeit because Swagger tends to Zeb Coulter, who was attacked backstage. Somehow Lana and Rusev comes out. Right after that, they give the Russian Pledge of Allegiance, and then Swagger comes out and brawls with Rusev. We're seeing Swagger versus Rusev again for the U.S. title. I like the fact that they're giving Swagger some type of exposure, but it's just to put Rusev over again. I don't see, Swagger winning the U.S. championship would be awesome, but at the same time, I really think that this is a kind of another filler. I think just a bunch of fillers for sure. I think John Cena and Seth Rollins the filler for Cena and Lesnar. I think that Rusev and Swagger is a filler because I definitely don't see Swagger beating Rusev for sure. And so I don't know. I don't see it. I don't like it. And it just seems like this is going to really lead to nowhere, unfortunately.
It's going to lead to nowhere. We're seeing the same thing over and over again. And poor Fandango could have put on a heck of a performance last night. Ended up just having to forfeit because Swagger wanted to tend to old man Zeb Coulter. So, I mean, the whole thing was a schmog. I mean, we're tired of it. We don't want to see Swagger against Rusev because we've seen that 650 million times. Instead, you got Fandango sitting over there in the end. I mean, he needs some action. He needs something to go off of. And Swagger, they can't produce. Are you serious? Come on. I mean, this guy deserves so much better. But then you have Jack Swagger backstage, Zeb Coulter, the worst actor of all time. in a real, it was ridiculous. I mean, I almost think Swagger was afraid to go against Fandango last night, if you ask me.
Yeah. I don't know if, I don't quite know why they're doing that. Great comment. Says absolutely Swagger versus Rusev draws 0 inches from me. And you're certainly not the only one. Although, you know, I think that Swagger should have a better babyface push than he has now. I think that he could be a really good babyface, especially with Coulter as his mouthpiece. But, you know, it's pretty evident that they're just, you know, taking Rusev to the moon. And, you know, Swagger's just a stepping stone on the way again. So that's not going to really draw any intrigue of that feud at all. Next we have another feud to me that doesn't draw any intrigue, to be honest with you. You have Wyatt defeating R-Truth. And, you know, Wyatt cuts the promo post-match and Ambrose comes out and attacks Bray. This is, to be honest with you, this is another feud that I have absolutely no interest in. Let me say this. The TLC match is probably going to be the best match of the night. They're going to put on a show. But when you think about wrestler progression, when you think about feuds, you have to take in consideration how was this going to help one or both wrestlers, preferably both, but usually in many cases when feuds happen, it's to put one wrestler over. For instance, the first Jack Swagger versus Rusev feud really didn't have any type of investment in Jack Swagger at all. It was really purposed to put Rusev over. Now, when you think of Bray Wyatt versus Dean Ambrose, who's going to be the one who really gets over from this feud? If Wyatt loses, that's really going to help. That's really going to hurt his character. That's really going to help hurt his status, because he's had multiple opportunities the past been 16 months now almost since he debuted when he went against Kane SummerSlam of last year. So Kane, Daniel Bryan, John Cena, Shield, Chris Jericho. You have, even when he was feuding with Big Show for a second, you have all of these names that Bray Wyatt has feuded with, these big names, these championship names that Bray Wyatt has feuded with, but still he's not really moved the needle. The needle on the over meter any more than he did when he started last year. As a matter of fact, toward this part last year, he's more over than he is now, because at this point they were feuding with Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan was joining the Wyatt family at the time. They were much more popular. And as far as Dean Ambrose is concerned, give the guy better gear. Give the guy better music. You've wrestled with Dean Ambrose before. You know how awesome he is as a mouthpiece, as a wrestler, as a character. He has what it takes. But you can't develop. And I keep saying this. Same thing with Seth Rollins. Character development is the way to put someone over. You can't help Dean Ambrose's character development if you have him feud with Bray Wyatt. If he beats Bray Wyatt, it's not really going to put Ambrose over, because Bray Wyatt isn't really a measuring stick at all right now. And then you have Ambrose coming out with just music that doesn't really draw interest at all. You have him come out with jeans and a t-shirt. How am I supposed to think that he has an opportunity to become the WWE World Heavyweight Champion if he comes out with generic music and jeans and a t-shirt? Character development is the way to go. You have to see it, that's what bothers me about really putting people over these days and really developing people's characters. When you had people like Steve Austin, when you had people like Triple H, Chris Jericho, The Rock, their gear was very centric to their character. You had the black tights and the black knee pads with Steve Austin, very fitting to his character. You had the Triple H logo on his tights, the Rock logo on his tights, Jericho's, you know, logo on his tights. You had the wardrobe was incorporated to really add an extra layer on characters, when you had Ric Flair, perfect example. Ric Flair had the matching boots with the tights and the robe. Dusty Rhodes had the DR on his tights with the cowboy boots. So wardrobe was so essential in character development. Nowadays, you're expecting us to be sold on someone becoming a world champion with the jeans and t-shirt on? Not at all. And that's the reason why I don't like the way they're developing these characters. Ambrose is not, I don't think they're investing in him like they should, and it bothers me to see that. And that's the reason why Bray versus Ambrose doesn't intrigue me at all.
It's not going to intrigue you, but, plain Jane stuff like that, as far as t-shirts and jeans, and that kind of makes them look like the everyday guys. Like, anybody can just go in there, jump in, do what they need to do. I mean, for me, I think Austin, he was plain. Like you said, he just came out with his black tights and black boots, but they're able to make a brand and a name after him just for the charisma that he brought with it. All of a sudden, he had a smoking skull, and he had the Austin 316. Ambrose has that little anarchy symbol that he has on some of his shirts when he comes out. With the D and the A, which is clever. I think that's great. That's a start, but it's not really a finish. And again, with him and Bray Wyatt going at it, nothing's going to come out of this thing. I mean, Wyatt has his own thing going. I don't think it needs the core to intersect with what Dean Ambrose is trying to do. I mean, they're loose cannons, yada, yada, yada. But I can see the t-shirt and jeans, how that can appeal to people, because he's just an everyday guy, just comes out and I'm going to whoop your butt and blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, you need to make something out of it. And I think he's got it. WWE just hasn't found it yet, or he hasn't found it yet. It's going to come together. But, yeah, as far as right now, it's not really, nothing's going to happen.
I sure hope so, because Pillman had that loose cannon gimmick and wore, the jeans with the shirt. And it was awesome. The loose cannon Brian Pillman gimmick was awesome. However, it was limited. It created a ceiling because he had the jeans and the shirt. It just wasn't world champion garb. It just wasn't. When you think of just the world champions down the line, their wardrobe was a very vital part of their character. Undertaker, he's a perfect example. Hulk Hogan, red and yellow. I mean, you go down the line of world champions from 1980 on, 1975 on, because you can even say Harley Race, because he was very big into his garb as well. But at least 1980 on. And even before that, because if you think of Nature Boy Buddy Roberts, he was real big into it. His wardrobe was was very instrumental to his character too. So, you're thinking at least 50 years back, wardrobe mattered. So you can't take away, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that was something that was so instrumental to really developing a character. And Dean Ambrose is living proof of how a bad choice of wardrobe can really, hurt a character. We've got a question here. What is Ambrose going to do at WrestleMania? I would actually prefer a heel Ambrose versus Chris Jericho at 31. That's what I want to see. that would be my preference, a heel Ambrose versus Jericho, because I really don't think this face Ambrose is working too well. I like Ambrose as a face, but Ambrose versus Jericho, a heel Ambrose versus Chris Jericho would certainly be a good choice for me. What would be your choice for Ambrose at 31?
I don't know. Yeah, Jericho would be an awesome mix-up. I don't know. Maybe if he's at the time, you know, Randy Orton.
Yeah, Orton wouldn't be too bad either.
Orton wouldn't be bad. It's kind of hard to place where I could see Ambrose in just a few, or Ambrose in just a few months from now. Orton would be great.
Yeah.
I could see maybe, yeah, at least with Orton, it would be like a legitimate, like, this is it, you know. Make it or break it.
Yeah.
You got a 10, 12-year veteran who's, you know, he's got his own place. And there's still, right now, Orton's, you know, hotter than he could ever be. He's going to come back as a face. It's going to be, I'm excited to see him come back. I never thought I'd say that about RKO. It's in there.
Next question, real quick, is well, the answer is Eastern. It was Eastern Championship Wrestling before Extreme Championship Wrestling. Next question is who owned ECW before Paul Heyman? And let's real quick, because we only got a few minutes left, and I want to address the. I just want to throw out some names for the flavor of the week. This is going to be short this week, and also want to address my release from Wrestling Inc. This past Thanksgiving weekend, and just the story behind that, and where I stand in that. So here we go. So real quick, the main event: Cena, Ziggler, and Ryback defeating Harper, Rollins, and Kane. I'm glad that Ziggler got the fall. I'm glad at what they're doing with Ziggler. They're trying to slowly but surely kind of repair the damage that they've had for Ziggler for so long. They're trying their best to try to repair that, and I like it. Then Show appears, and Eric Rowan appears, a bunch of, you know, melee. Rowan makes a save with the steel steps, and then Cena AA Show. Show versus Rowan with Show versus Rowan in the stairs match is confirmed for TLC. So I guess it's tables, ladders, chairs, and steps. So stairs match between Eric Rowan and Big Show. That's pretty weird, but at least, you know, they're going to, at least Rowan is getting some type of opportunity. I'm not a big fan of it, but it was a decent main event.
The main event, and you know, we will go on to that. A few minutes left. I mean, honestly, Todd Gordon, I believe, was ECW.
Oh, Todd Gordon was, and you know, you did. You know, you have dibs on the question. You just trying to slide that in there. I can't believe it. All right, let's go on.
Nobody else.
Let's go. Oh no.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, let's go on to the flavor of the week. We'll be right back.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
Real quick, 140th episode. The theme of tonight is former football players turned pro wrestlers, and so there's some notable ones. There's some ones like Mongo McMichael and Reggie Green and Reggie White and Kevin Green that didn't do too well. Mongo was the U.S. champion, but there were some who didn't do too well. But just five, I'm going to name five. I'm going to name six, actually. Roman Reigns, Bill Goldberg, Brian Pillman from the Bengals, Goldberg for the Falcons. Roman Reigns did some work in Jacksonville, but he wasn't really established in the NFL. The Cat Ernie Ladd with the San Diego Chargers, and then Ron Simmons with the Browns, but mostly Florida State, and then Vader with the Rams. I would say out of all of those, I would say that Bill Goldberg and Ernie Ladd too, but Bill Goldberg from an NFL standpoint is probably one of the most notable straight from the NFL wrestlers that turned pro wrestlers, probably the most successful.
Yeah, I agree with that. Bill Goldberg and Brian Pillman come to mind. Even though I hate the Bengals more than anything in the world, you know, Brian Pillman, I forgive him for his awesome wrestling time. Flying Brian, you're always in my heart, and I miss you a lot.
Absolutely. All right, real quick, we only got a couple minutes left. Yes, this weekend I was released from Wrestling Inc. It was some misinformation I received from regarding a Rock tweet that was actually a few years back, and I reported it. And on Wrestling Inc., you can't delete your articles. You have to go through Raj to delete your articles, which is ridiculous. And so I didn't even want to go through all that. I tried to do it myself, still couldn't find a way to delete it, and basically, you know, I know I basically shot myself in the foot at that time, and then, you know, I didn't even know I got released until I saw it on Twitter. It was reporting it to other people, and then I received an email. I looked at my email, and I received the email, and he was very regretful. I'm sorry. You know, it was too big of a mistake. You know, we want you down the line, but just right now, I'm sorry. You know, and so he was really regretful by doing it, but I guess to save face, he said he didn't want Wrestling Inc. to seem Bush League with that type of reporting. So it was very interesting, and he wants me down the line, but I don't know if I'm going to go back, to be honest with you. I was there 2 years, and it was very good. It was a very great opportunity, but it's one of those things that you got to care about your employees, and you got to make them excited to be a part of it, and that's what I love about RioWrestling.net so much. It's a great family. The stream is awesome, and so tweet at Crave Wrestling. Tweet at Chris Prolific is my personal Twitter if you want to know more about the release. We're running out of time, so I may talk about a little bit more this weekend, next week. But thanks to Moose, thanks to everyone who listened for 140, and until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling. God bless. Goodbye.